Welcome back to the Loot Podcast. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by the Goku to my Vegeta. It is Dr. Amanda. How are you doing?
I'm great, Ariel. I've been waiting in the podcast studio for 2 hours. I'm a little bit nervous about getting on this ride with you, but I think if I just close my eyes, it'll be over before I know it.
That was very depressing. I remember when I used to go to theme parks more often, and like the wait time is something that you really have to like factor in as far as like how many rides you're going to be able to go on, mm-hmm. and like the amount of time that you'll have. So that was like a little bit of a sobering thought.
Yeah, I'm really like I feel like, you know, well, you people might not be aware of this, but we've been in a pandemic for the past two and a half mm-hmm. years or so. Mm-hmm.
Some people have been in line that whole time, so they have no idea.
I feel like my children are emerging into theme park age. So being like, being a kid waiting online for a theme park, I remember how miserable that was, but I can only begin to imagine the hell that it is to be a parent waiting online for these theme park rides with your children.
They need like a thing that the children can do. Like maybe like mm-hmm. they're providing iPads that then I guess you have to like wipe down or something. Like
yeah, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. But anyway, yeah. So theme parks, that's we're going to hit on that in this episode.
Yes. Episode four. Apple TV's Loot. Are we halfway? I'm trying to remember. We said this last, I believe it's 10 episodes. So we're almost halfway.
10 episodes, yeah.
We're approaching the halfway mark. So we are cognizant of that. Mm-hmm. And again, we always do this up top. I really liked this episode. This show is giving me like the sweet feels, you know, just mm-hmm. like very wholesome, very organic, just like normal everyday human interactions and comfort. I don't know. What about you?
So, Ariel, not to be a contrarian, but this episode, I think that this was a low point for me mm-hmm. of the first four. And I'll tell you, okay, I'll share this up top. I think that what I am is like, I'm a romantic trapped in a cynic's brain. So like, I get really like moved, like the end of this episode when we see Arthur's face, like, it's like, I start to like well up, like it affects me. Like I, like this, the writers, like they know how to work their like sincerity and their, you know, and the, you know, hit those notes and like, they can press those buttons in me, but mm-hmm. at the same time, I don't like love it. I fight within myself. Like, I think that this episode gave Maya Rudolph sort of the least to do comedically.
Yes.
I think that it, you know, probably was bringing in, sort of relying a little bit more heavily on some like well-worn tropes, especially in this type of like sincere comedy with heart. Like, you think about The Office and the Jim and Pam of it all. Mm-hmm. And we definitely got this in Parks and Rec. I think that this went like right back to like the kind of like, will they, won't they, you know, romantic relationship and like friendships deepening and characters caring about each other, which is sweet. And I love that stuff. Like, I'm a very human, empathic person who like all of those emotional notes hit with me. But in my comedies, I like joke. So I think that this was like relatively like low joke ratio mm-hmm. episode. And I think that that's when I'm enjoying this show the most. Nonetheless, I mean, still like a fully delightful, you know, half an hour of television where I laughed and I'm still enjoying spending time with these characters. But like, I think that this one had a little bit less of what I am enjoying the most from the show.
That makes sense. I think for sure, as I sit and think about it, you're like, okay, what is like the gist of the episode? What is like the driving force? There's basically like the roller coaster, the not date that they go on, and then the B plot with Nicholas and mm-hmm. Howie. And I do think that you're right that there is, I mean, like with the exception of the rich part of it, you know, like there's the helicopter element. Right. Like we have seen, to your point, we have seen like a date like this many times, but like mm-hmm. what gives it a little bit of an extra wrinkle here is like all the money that she has and how she's able to like wield it. But what I did enjoy about it was, to a point that you had made previously in an episode, like the Molly and Arthur friendship relationship of like, do they actually have chemistry? They're drawn to each other. What does that mean? Like, I am a fan of, you know, and people talk about this when they talk about Ted Lasso. I won't get into like spoilers, but just as far as like, can people be, you know, does a show always have to set up people to be like romantically linked? Mm-hmm. Can it just stay as like a platonic mm-hmm. thing that is still very, very deep, very meaningful, very emotional? And I think before this episode, I was kind of hoping, oh, maybe they'll like kind of zig and they, you know, maybe they won't be, even though like the show is clearly, at least as far as like traditional tropes, the show seems to be leaning in the romantic direction. I always like a pivot. And here, I didn't mind that they kept going in the romantic direction because it felt so honest. Like, I think so mm-hmm. often show what gets on people's nerves, at least for me personally, is like there are only romantic beats, and it's mm-hmm. it's like love at first sight kind of stuff where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, immediately like we're linked and we're connected, and it's, and that's not quite mm-hmm. I mean, that's not my experience. I don't know about everybody else. And the fact that like here they're just connecting on this very honest human everyday level, I think worked a lot for me as far as like establishing a connection, because romantic feelings can come up, especially when you don't expect them to. So I did really appreciate that part of it.
Yeah. And I do think that they built that in a very like honest, believable way. And I do think like, you know, I was like sort of surprised at how moved I was by the end of this episode and like feeling for Arthur's position that he's in, right? Like, at, you know, at when we get to the end of the episode, so we can reflect on that there. So I do think they've done a good job at establishing that this is like a credible relationship, making us care about these characters and like, you know, and see, you know, how they might be drawn to one another. So all of that stuff is good. But, you know, so I think we can get into the episode and sort of talk through it you know, and see what we, you know, and sort of follow along on that journey.
Yes, that sounds like a plan. Now that we've done our opening town hall, yeah, we can get into some specifics.
Yeah, now I will adjourn the city council meeting and we are going to put episode 4, Excitement Park, on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was worried that it was gonna, when I heard the name, I was worried it was going to be a little bit more like Action Park, I think it was called. They did a whole documentary about it on HBO Max. I was like, oh no.
Did you see that?
I saw the original short. It was like a 10 or 15 minute like mini documentary before they extended it more recently into a full thing. I really want to check out the long one.
Ariel, I have been many a time to the Action Park that is.
It was before my time. I was so sad. I was so sad. Like, I just missed it because I have friends who have been.
Uh-huh. So I watched that. I watched it. And for people that don't know, Action Park was a theme park in northern New Jersey that was like just sort of, it really was like, theme parks in the Philippines, I'm sure were built to a higher standard. Like, it was just total Absolutely. Wild West, complete free for all. Like, all of the rides were dangerous. People would routinely die there. But back in like the 80s and early 90s, when parents did not care about the livelihood of their children. Uh-huh. My era of youth.
Yes. A lot of injuries.
Yeah. We went there like all the time, and watching it's like amazing watching that documentary. Like, I could get the sense memory of like the friction burns that I would get on the slides because like there was no engineer or physicist involved in like deciding any of this stuff. And the entire place was run by these like 16-year-olds who were visibly drunk and stoned while they were operating the equipment.
Basically children, like the blind, mm-hmm. like the blind leading the blind, like children just not, and to your point, intoxicated people, like children, it's not a good combination.
So that was the thing that happened. But here in Luke, we're going to see that Molly is actually, so this is, so we cold open in the Philippines at an amusement park, and we see a couple online about to get on the roller coaster. And at this point, I actually had a minute where I was like, did I click on the wrong show by accident? Because like, I did not see how this was relating to the universe of Loot. But we have, you know, the man in the couple is nervous. He doesn't like heights, but the woman is really encouraging him. And she's like, you know, I'll hold your hand. It'll be over before you know it. Like, really funny exchange. Like, you know, she's trying to comfort him. She's like, there's 9-year-olds that are going to go on this. It's not too scary. And the man says, children have nothing to live for. I just got promoted at work.
Which is so funny and also so sad. Like, boo hiss at capitalism.
Right. I mean, like, this man does not have insight into like the interior lives of children. It's like, they have nothing to live for. You got a promotion. Okay.
All right, dare you just assume? I'm sure there are some children who have something to live
for. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe like the next episode of Dragon Ball Z, perhaps, Ariel.
Way to bring it back full circle. Yes, there's always the next episode of XYZ YouTube property for them to
exactly,
watch.
Exactly. Lots to live for. Lots to live for. But you know, just pretty quickly, we cut right to this same couple, and the roller coaster has like frozen at the very top of an upside down loop-de-loop, and all of the riders are trapped up there in abject terror, screaming their heads off.
This is a nightmare. And like the whole time I'm just like, oh no, all that pressure on their heads and their brains.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing, right? I'm not a scientist.
Yeah. Yeah. So So I am a neuropsychologist that studies brain injury. I'm wondering what, like, so I don't know if this would cause any like traumatic or pressure injury to the brain. I do think that this like blood flow situation does not strike me as
like
great.
The pooling. Sorry to get like detailed. Yeah, like the pooling of the blood is what I worry about.
I'm gonna look up, is it dangerous to be upside down for hours
on end and then being fed by firefighters?
All right. It can be dangerous and even deadly to hang upside down for too long as blood pools to the head. Yeah. So let's see, hanging upside down. How long can you hang upside down? I guess this is for training. Start hanging in a moderate position for 30 seconds to 1 minute at a time, then increase by 2 to 3 minutes. Listen to your body and return to an upright position if you don't feel well. You may be able to work up to using an inversion table for 10 to 20 minutes at a time. Can you die from hanging upside down? It is possible to die from hanging upside down for too long. It's rare, but blood can pool to the head, which is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I gotta believe that at best these people had to be like monitored, you know, like at a hospital.
Yeah, this is like
after some amount of time.
This website, healthline.com, suggests that like 10 to 20 minutes is the upper limit. So, these people were like, I think it's
these
like
people were really testing it. Yeah.
And like this website recommends you work up to it with like 30 second, 1 minute. Yes. You don't jump right in.
These people like ran the marathon of hanging upside down after having never run before, basically.
So folks, do not do this. Do not do this at home.
Don't try this at home. Don't get stuck on a roller coaster.
Post-show recaps does not recommend that you get stuck on a roller coaster.
We cannot condone. I will just say very quickly, the cool thing about space is that when you're hanging upside down, it doesn't matter because there's
space out of here. Anti-space. I don't want to hear
Just trying to slowly like indoctrinate you into like a pro space state of mind.
It's not gonna work. I was watching For All Mankind last night and I was like, ugh, too much space.
You're like, this is trash.
It's like, this show is pretty good but too much space.
Mucho space.
They're watching this in the office. They're watching the news coverage of this really international news story about this theme park. This is big news. And Molly, walks into the boardroom with Frappuccinos for everybody. We learn that at this point they've been stuck for 7 hours. Sophia says, you know, this is like a disaster. Nothing was built to code, cost cutting, bribery. It's horrible. Molly's like, oh, I feel so bad for them. And then we find out from the newscaster that Molly owns this theme park.
And this is when Nicholas comes running in like, no, don't let her see the news and see that she looks so beautiful after he realizes that she's already standing here.
It's like, hello, cheekbones. I love like, I love the way that Nicholas like handles and manages Molly. Like, I love that dynamic. And that gets us to the opening credits.
And it's just like really sweet to see him, like, we've already spoken a little bit about like Nicholas and Molly's relationship, but like to see him be so concerned, and yes, it's his job, but seem so genuinely concerned that this would hurt her, that she would have like an emotional reaction to this is sweet from him.
Yeah. He's very protective of Molly.
Yes.
Back in Sophia's office, like this, what I thought was one of the funnier parts of the episode is sort of the updates on what's happening at the theme park in the Philippines. Like they haven't gotten out yet, but they fed them dinner, which is good. I'm just like curious about how they bring up snacks, I guess, the dinner. What do you think the dinner is?
Probably. Oh God, I would say. Okay, as I'm thinking about it, like the less liquid, the better, right? Because that's like something about the body making that, like maybe, I don't know, something like more solid or pasty.
It seems like
I'm not
hard
sure
to digest in that position. Like, right. And maybe there's like choking hazards. Do you think David Chang?
Oh, yeah. So maybe it is. David Chang was flown there via the Concorde, which I don't even think is around anymore, but Molly got one.
Yeah.
And was feeding them like, cherry smoothies from Washington State.
Molly has talked to a lawyer, and now we know that she's inherited a bunch of companies that John had acquired, but she doesn't know anything about any of these companies. Ariel,
no, just like Sophia doesn't know how are these people going to poop, which I just wanted to call out because it's, again, Michaela J. Rodriguez, like with incredible line reads.
Yes.
To your point, like the updates about the roller coaster that we keep getting throughout the episode are like so funny because we get so many funny reactions like this from all these other characters as well. It's just great stuff.
Yeah, I imagine that whole situation just was not very good, Ariel.
It got messy in probably a lot of ways.
Yeah. We don't get details about that, but I think your imagination can run wild. Yeah, Sophia wants to know how she doesn't know about any of these holdings of hers. And Molly says, well, to be fair, I was drunk the whole July that was happening.
The whole July? Which, as people who just arrived at July finally in real life.
Oh, yeah.
That's a scary prospect of like, okay, that's it. This is a 30-day bend. Hold on. March, April, May, June, July. A 31-day bender.
Do you have a knuckle trick for figuring?
Yes. Okay, I learned this. Speaking of 9-year-olds.
I want to share this with our audience. I noticed when Ariel was figuring out how many days were in July that he was counting on his knuckles.
Yes. So you start, so you only have... You have the four knuckles and then the three spaces in between. So what you do is you start on the one knuckle and it doesn't matter which direction you go in because it's symmetrical or whatever. So you go, so you count the knuckles and the thing in between the knuckles. So any knuckle is a 31-day month, like you start January. And any in between is a non-30-day. So you go January, February, March, April, May, June, July. And then you repeat the knuckle because both July and on the way back, both July and August have 31. So then you can go July, August on the same knuckle and then reverse August, September, October, November, December, whatever.
Wow.
That's my trick.
I just do the like 30 days has November, April, June, and November.
I could never remember it. Like you could tell me right now and I will never remember the rhyme.
I think I got it wrong when I just said it. So I like the knuckle thing better.
Just things you learn as a child sometimes do in fact stay in your brain.
So children, you do have something to live for.
You need to learn this trick.
So anyways, Tavia has to go to her zoning commission meeting about this housing project. And like, you know, Molly's going to sit this one out. It's like a bad PR moment for Molly. But it would be a good idea for her to take this opportunity to figure out all the companies she owns, because we don't want this kind of thing reflecting poorly on the foundation.
Which totally makes sense. Kind of sounds like trash when you say it out loud, but totally makes sense.
Yeah. And this is like, you know, I don't know. We can do like a little bit of like a social commentary digest at the end of this. But yeah, so this is a good thing though. Know about your companies that you own and their business practices. Back in Molly's office, Arthur comes in and he's organized all of her companies into these three piles, the ones that are totally okay, the ones that are problematic, you know, oil, weapons manufacturers,
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, like, you know
that,
you
that
just,
whole thing.
You just acquire some weapons manufacturers. Turns out Molly actually owns most of the theme parks in the Philippines.
To which she says, oh, got to get rid of those. Which,
yeah, don't
you know, probably a little unfair. But the responsible thing to do would be to make sure that the people she's selling to will be responsible owners and not, in fact, more evil and careless and horrible than her a lack of knowledge of owning them at all.
Right, right. That would be ideal. I think that would be ideal. And then there's a middle pile, the NMIs, which stands for Need More Information, a little abbreviation that Arthur came up with in his 30s. Like that 30s. Detail. In my 30s, in that decade, I workshopped this and I really perfected this abbreviation. So these are the ones that, like, it's not entirely clear. One of them is the First American Heritage Society. They're going to need to check it out. And this is going to set up Molly and Arthur going out on a little outing together to do some research into this company. And Arthur has this cute moment where he's like, oh, I guess I could leave the office. I did bring my lunch. And Molly teases him. He has a lunchbox, but it's actually a weather-resistant cooler. They tested it in space, Ariel.
I was going to say, listen, sometimes space is good for things, much to the chagrin of Dr. Amanda. But I love
it. It seems unnecessary.
Like, who is going to take lunch to space? Like, nothing will.
Like, your astronaut ice cream? What are you having for lunch?
I know. The interesting thing is, or not the interesting thing is, but like, this was so relatable to me because as someone who very, very rarely takes lunch to work, I was a big, like, lunch from home child.
Yeah.
Which, you know, at that age, you don't really have a lot of say. So maybe now I'm rebelling as an adult. But, the few times that I do take lunch, and it's always like some kind of either delicious leftover that I've ordered, or sometimes it's something my mom has made because I go over there for dinner, you always invariably end up getting some invite, and then you're like, what do I do now?
Oh yeah, it's awkward.
Like,
it's,
I'm not gonna, he takes the hilarious position of maybe I'll just bring it with me, which is like the least realistic. But you're like, okay, do I save it for tomorrow? But what if tomorrow is a Saturday? What if you brought it to work on a Friday?
I know.
For a Saturday. And like, do you throw it away? Nobody wants to do that. Waste is bad.
But these these are excellent points, Ariel. I'm so glad that you brought it up. The lunch, like the bringing lunch dilemma is real. And like, some people are so good at bringing their lunch from home every single day and eating the lunch that they brought every single day. It's like a level of adulthood that I now know about myself I can never achieve. Like, I do not have it. I do not have it in me. I'll get on like these like streaks where I'm pretty good at bringing lunch and I'll like feel so good about myself. I'm like, I'm probably eating healthier. I'm like, you know, saving money. Like, no, it's just like, you know, because when you buy lunch, you're like, right. Like, I'll just get this like thing, you know, So, I mean, I feel so like wholesome and like proud of myself when I bring my lunch, but it's like, yeah, it's like maybe I get an invite. Maybe I'm still hungry after I finish my sad little home lunch and then I end up getting something anyway. And then there's like the cleaning your like containers at work. Like, it's like,
Nothing more sad than like the Tupperware clean, and then like you don't clean it right away, and then that's a mistake, and then like, am I ever able to use this? And they say plastic is fine, but plastic is partly porous. That's why I prefer the glass Tupperware, because glass is non-porous.
No, glass is good. Yeah, I have these little metal lunch tins for my kids that I use. Like, ooh. I got like a bento. Whatever. I'll send you the Amazon link.
The link. Can you take it to space? That's the question.
Oh, I bet Bezos is taking all of that. Right. Anyway, so they have this cute exchange about lunch. Molly teases him about using the slang jazzed up. Like, this is all like flirty Molly and Arthur chemistry scene. And we're going to get a lot of that in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. It's I just love them both so much, as I said, the actors and the characters. So I'm just like, ooh, organic chemistry. Let's watch it happen.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, tell my jokes. And
Amanda's like, boo, love is dead. I want humor.
Oh, it's so sad, but it's true. And then back in the copy room, Howard is going to see that Nicholas has printed out audition scenes and left them there, and he's gonna, you know, he wants to know more about this, like about Nicholas's other life. We get another update about the Philippines from Nicholas. They sent firemen up there, but now they're stuck too. Ariel, are you somebody who's seen Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I have seen many scenes.
Yeah, there's like a million seasons now. I was like very much keeping up with it up to a point, but like there's this one of my favorite episodes is like a cat gets stuck in the wall, and the character Charlie's solution is to just put more cats on the wall to help that get that cat out.
So dumb.
So whenever there's like a situation where like, you know, you make the problem worse by like putting something else into the equation, I always think of like the cat in the wall, and like he's like, "Ooh, cat in the wall! Now you're speaking my language." So,
yeah. I think there was a scene. I think it was before this. I think there was a scene with Howie when he was like, Howard was talking. I think he was watching the news, and he was like, "Oh, they're trying to get a ladder up there."
Oh like, yeah, no, it's Molly.
But it's not long enough.
That's not gonna work. That's not long enough.
And I love that after that first scene, you don't really see, you're only watching them watch the footage. So it's like much easier to imagine. And it's actually probably funnier just to imagine these things that they're talking about.
You get it all through the character's eyes after that initial scene. Howard is not at all surprised that Nicholas is an actor because he's so handsome. So he should be an actor or at least a cult leader or something like that.
Incredible line.
But Nicholas left acting behind when he started to work for Molly. It's like the kid you leave at Target. Sure, sometimes you think about it, but I'm never going back there.
But I'm never going back there. Like the way he says that, it's so good. It's legendary. Like this line alone is probably the funniest I laughed, certainly in this episode.
Yeah, I've said this like, you know, I've said this a number of times now, but Joel Kim Booster as Nicholas here is like one of the true delights for me of this season so far.
He's killing it.
Yeah, but Howard is really encouraging here. Like, even though Nicholas is very dismissive, you know, you have to do this audition, and it looks really good. It's about a dead dad, and that always works.
Mm-hmm. People love that.
Love that dead dad stuff. Then we cut to Arthur and Molly at the art gallery. This scene, Ariel, is like, this felt like a scene that I've probably seen a million times in various movies and television shows. The like, we're walking around an art gallery and one of the characters is going to say, "I don't know anything about art." And then the other character says like, "Well, nobody does. You just pretend." Yeah. Da, 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 da. It's like, this felt like very much like well-worn, kind of bordering on hackneyed, you know, dialogue scene building
territory. I don't disagree. The one thing that I will say is that, and I I am one to be overly generous for things that I really enjoy, or mm-hmm. overly generous to things that I really enjoy, like this. The one thought I had while I was watching it is like, I wonder if they were going to stay with me. I wonder if they were going for a thing where like, she's like, the writers recognize that this isn't good, but like they're trying to write it in the voice of Molly specifically, of like their dynamic and their tone. So like, it is something that she would say, even though she knows that it's like not good, but it's like kind of charming because she's doing it. It's making less sense as I say it out loud, but I was like, oh, it's something she, it does feel like, I guess ultimately the point is it does feel like something she would say, mm-hmm. Because we know that she is like a repeater of things. Like when she said the thing to, mm-hmm.
Oprah,
to Sophia, that she had said to Oprah. Exactly.
So it's almost like a wink at, this is something that would happen and this is how Molly would react in it. I mean, I feel like this whole episode, my biggest critique of this whole episode is that this episode had the least of what is like special and fun about Molly as a character, and yeah. more like, oh, this is the function that she has in this world. Like, she's yes. the billionaire. She owns this company. She has this employee that she has chemistry with. It was like all her function and not yeah. like her actual character. And we like know and believe that she's charming because we've seen that before. But I don't feel like we saw that come through in this yeah. episode. And like, this was the first time where I was like, this didn't even have to be Molly Rudolph. This could have been like 100 other actresses in this place. And like, it right. would have kind of felt the same way. It didn't really yeah. seem to have her voice. So that's probably being a little harsh on this. I did think.
No, I think that makes sense for sure. I mean, especially as a person who, as a rom-comist, as mm. or I think in Ted Lasso they famously called it a rom-communist. as some people are, I think that definitely tracks and makes sense, because the show has already shown, even like that aside a little bit, this series has already shown that it knows how to be smart in the face of things that are tropey and well worn. Mm-hmm. And yeah. this felt like it was missing a little bit of that like extra layer or like extra wink or something like mm-hmm. that.
I did think it was very sweet when, you know, Arthur talks about why he's always like birds. Like, see, this is me. Like, I'm a romantic trapped in a cynic's brain. He says that mm-hmm. the birds are beautiful, perfectly made little creatures. And you only get a second of that beauty because you know it's going to fly away.
God, and this is like, this moment is the little bird in the episode, right? Oh, like, this is the moment that like really flies, worked, and then yes, it flies away so quickly.
Away. Oh my goodness.
It's a metaphor.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, and Molly is going to, like, when Arthur goes off in the other room, Molly asks the gallery worker about the bird painting, and like, we know that she's going to buy it for him mm-hmm. because she has like more money than God, so she can yeah. buy literally everything.
God is taking out loans from her. God is like, listen, it's yeah. been rough. It's been a rough millennia. I need this money.
He's like, you millionaire, billionaires are really like bleeding me dry here. mm-hmm. Back in the break room, we have Howard brings a video to show Nicholas. Nicholas says, if this is the one with the panda and the dog that are friends, I've already seen it.
Like, clearly, Nicholas is like he has his finger on the pulse of shit on social media.
Yeah, he's seen all the viral videos, he knows. But this is a video of Nicholas's Axe body spray commercial.
The length of time that he sprays himself
with
the Axe, like, I have to go there immediately.
Yeah, this like, was
he
yeah.
probably sprays himself in one continuous spray all over his body and his face for a good like 6 to 7 seconds.
Like it must be like a toxic amount of Axe, like, and it's so much around his face.
That's the best part.
So is Axe body spray still a thing? Like, I feel like this is not like.
Unfortunately, I have seen it in stores. It isn't, yeah, but that's not to say it's still quote unquote like relevant or definitely not as big as it once was.
Right. And they're just like cool with looking like a total joke in this show, I guess. I mean, I guess all press is good press.
Yeah, I think there's a thing about like, or this isn't really set, you know, the way like the SNL rules, like they can kind of do anything because it's like satire, or I can't remember the word. Mm-hmm. But I wonder here for this kind of thing, if like what kind of permission they have to get.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, and then it's like he like douses himself in Axe body spray, and then there's like the I think Kristen likes it, and he's got like women pawing at him from both sides.
It's literally just hands. It's the hands, like the hands and the like disembodied voices.
And then we see like the other hand with a different color nail polish, and he's like, and so does her sister.
Yeah, right. They have to establish that it's two different sets of hands. Two different nail polish.
Yeah, so and then funny. It's Axe body spray. You'll be beating them off.
Incredible use of that sentence.
Yes, amazing. And then as Howard says, is that ad a problematic reflection of our attitudes towards women in the not so distant past? Yes. But are you good in it? Also yes.
The not so distant past is the best part of that, and it's clearly hilarious.
Yes. And well, thank goodness that we've moved past that era as a society, and now our attitudes towards now our attitudes towards women are A++. No notes.
Bring back the Axe days. I think they were better.
I know. Oh gosh, so sad. That's why we need to laugh at funny comedies.
Laugh with us.
So then they're going to, you know, then they're going to work on, you know, they're going to work on the audition scenes. Howard's going to run lines with Nicholas. He reads the scene, and Howard is like such a sweet, supportive friend, Ariel.
He's the best. Like we already, and certainly you, like you saw this coming from a mile away, the like Howard and Nicholas friendship, and here that seed is just fully blooming.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Just I would watch these two do anything. They're so funny separately. They're incredibly funny together. And it's so nice to see Howard like want to repay the favor, right? Of like Nicholas helping him with his relationship stuff. Cause he's the one that finds the thing in the copy machine. He's the one that's like pushing the issue. So it's like he's really trying to be there for him.
Yeah, he recognizes like that Nicholas has this longing. Like he's not, you know, he's not like living his best life. Like, yeah, he puts on a brave face, but maybe deep down he's a little unsatisfied with things. And Howard really wants to help his friend maximize his potential. It's so sweet.
He's so pure.
He is.
He's such a good Goku.
That's what I was going to ask. I was like, is he fulfilling his Goku and Vegeta
absolutely
relationship here?
First of all, I should say, I noticed earlier in the episode that and this was really touching for me because this is like one of those things that's like a small detail that you could very easily miss. But Nicholas still has the little Vegeta doll on his desk.
Oh,
so it's like very sweet that he has openly and like, I don't know, just genuinely like embraced that of even like, okay, I have no idea what this even means, but like I will put it here because, you know, Howard
that
gave it to me.
Very sweet.
But yes, like Goku is almost like blissfully unaware of anything else going around him, but he always has a great positive attitude. He's always stepping in when there's wrong being done, and like he's helpful of his friends and supportive. So it's very Goku here.
That's very wonderful. So Ariel, I know that you and I are a relatively new podcasting duo, but do we fulfill the Goku and Vegeta archetypes?
I like that we both, it seems like the layman, and this is the lame answer, but I think it's true. I think we fluctuate a little bit. Like you're down on something, you'll be like a little bit more Vegeta, and then I turn into Goku.
Okay.
But I think in life, I'm much more of a Vegeta. So my Vegeta comes out, so to speak, every once in a while. Yeah. So you're there for me with your Goku stuff.
Okay. Oh, wow. So
I think we're killing it.
It seems like the perfect balance.
Yes.
Go it's us. Look at us. Look at us. At the city council meeting, Sophia is pushing the council members to put the housing project on the agenda. They start asking about Molly. They want to know exactly how involved she is in the day to day. Sophia is going to distance herself from Molly, sort of like she's saying, oh yeah, you probably saw the thing about the theme park. You know, Molly is involved, but it's really my team that does the work. But it turns out the council members are very interested in Molly. They think what she's doing is great and they'd love to see her come to a future meeting.
This was probably the most fascinating moment of the episode for me, because we get, in response to what you just said, of the council members are like, basically like, where is your celebrity? We want this mm-hmm. celebrity that we know. Mm-hmm. Trying to read Sophia's face here and the complicated emotions that she seems to be feeling mm-hmm. is endlessly fascinating to me, because mm-hmm. we know that from the offset, Sophia was worried about Molly's involvement, right? So she was like a little mm-hmm. bit hesitant to even allow her into the world. Finally, she relented, and you know, she's gotten some benefit out of that, both personal and for the organization itself. But like, there's also, I think, a little bit of I don't know what to call it, not quite ego, but there's a worry, I think, a very normal human emotional worry of like, her being less important, perhaps. Like, Sophia has clearly worked very, very hard to get where she is. Mm-hmm. And now she's being recognized and she's getting something she wants, which is great, but it's basically only because of Molly's involvement. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like that complicated emotion of, okay, I got what I wanted, but it doesn't look like what I thought it would look like. Is this, like, I was wondering if they're in some way seeding some kind of upcoming aversion that Sophia right. might start to have with Molly, or even some potential friction, as Sophia herself
Ooh,
has
friction
said.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really fascinating.
That's interesting, and I definitely want to track that, because I think that that's a possibility that we'll see that, because we're seeing the Sophia Molly relationship sort of deepen too, and could this be like a wrinkle in that?
Right, exactly.
One of the ways that I sort of read this, and I do think this is fascinating, and there's a lot there, is that like, Sophia has had this worldview that if she's dedicated and competent and doing the work for the right reasons in the best way she can, that that is what is going to get results and, you know, end up doing the most good. But like, what Molly's involvement is showing her is that there's like this much less meritocratic element that goes yes. on, where it's like mm-hmm. just by the virtue of these like very, very sort of shallow things like celebrity and money and publicity. It's like all of these things that it's not where Sophia lives. Like, Sophia lives in like the put your nose down and do the yeah. hard work, that mm-hmm. that this other, you know, element is going to be what gets results. And I don't know if right now she's resenting Molly for it as much as it's sort of like challenging her whole model of how to effective. Yeah. But I do think it's something to look at, because like I said in our first episode when we recapped with Josh, like, I'll be really interested to see if this show develops a thesis around, you know, doing humanitarian good and how to use resources to right. help people. Because like, it's great that this housing project is going to get built. That's a clear win and it's good. But then you also see that this is somebody who like owns multiple shoddy theme parks in the Philippines right. and who like has all of the, is using a helicopter to get a high school student to her soccer game. It's like, there's yes. such a waste of resources here and such a misuse of resources that at the end of the day, to show my card, it's like, couldn't she just pay more taxes and we would have a more equitable society? Yeah. So I would love to see like the show move into that tension. And like, I think that this shows that all of these like shallow, frivolous things end up carrying mm-hmm. a lot more currency in our society than actual people like Sophia, who are doing hard work and trying to do the best they can. So I don't know. That was probably like a lot of a rant, but so it'll be interesting to see how the show.
I think it's fascinating. Like as I'm sitting here listening to you, like I am picturing the incredibly effective moving scene of Sophia basically like not yelling at Molly, but like really having it out of just like laying out, to your point, like laying out, you know, we've already gotten some tease of like her life and the difficulties that she went through that like inspired her to want to follow this line of work. And to just, you know, Molly already recognizes that she doesn't kind of live in the real world, but like Sophia really to take her to task, like, no, you don't understand, and yeah, kind of lay it all out for her. I would really love to see that. And I think the show so far is moving in a direction that still seems possible. Like that doesn't seem like out of the realm of possibility for where they could go.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be great for that to come to a head. I think it would be only more powerful if they're establishing this backdrop of Molly and Sophia's like genuine friendship with each other. I think that gives the possibility, yes, that this could land in such a more powerful way. So I would love to see that, loot. Just so you know, I'm putting it out there.
It's not too late to rewrite.
Not too late. If you forgot, just kind of sneak that in.
Yes. Yes. And to your point, exactly. The other layer, I think I want to like super emphasize that the layer of their friendship is what makes it more complicated and messy potentially. And I love that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Messy. Messy like being stuck upside down on a roller coaster.
Oh no. Where will they poop?
we don't need that kind of ads.
We don't need that.
Meanwhile, over at the out there, there's Nancy, what am I talking about? Meanwhile, Molly and Arthur are still
Nancy,
on their-
you don't know Nancy, the famous, her other she? Assistant, Nancy, yeah, right?
Who is she? Meanwhile, we have Arthur and Molly are still on their tour of questionable business holdings, and we find out that one of the other things that Molly owns is an alpaca farm. And the backstory here is that John missed an anniversary dinner. And as a makeup gift, he bought Molly an alpaca farm because she likes alpaca sweaters.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Like, as you do.
As one does. And I think boo hiss at John still again. I love that they keep bringing him up. You know, it's
John's
like he's
the
still,
worst.
Mm-hmm. He's still that like specter, hanging around Molly, or floating, I guess, as specters do. But they get another cute moment, Molly and Arthur. And Arthur talks about first he talks about the alpaca that's checking him out, which is, you know, it's relatable. I've had that happen to me as well.
I guess I don't have that animal magnetism because it's never happened to me.
They can tell that you hate space. So they're like, space is nature. Space is nature.
No. Alpacas are also anti-space. Just trust me on this one.
They're like, oh, we don't like it. It's too dark.
No, they would hate it there. Come on.
They can't jump as high. That's fair.
No, it's BS.
And then he starts talking about his marriage, because Molly basically just like brings it up full stop, like so what happened to your marriage?
Yeah, mind your business, Molly, this is your boy. So we hear a little bit about Arthur's divorce. It wasn't dramatic. They just sort of grew apart. He was doing more hiking and bird watching while she got into the whole ballroom dancing lifestyle.
Incredible. Clearly she was a fan of So You Think You Can Dance and he was not. So that's on him.
It tears marriages apart. You know, so, and he says like, well, you know, it's not that bad being alone. I can go for a hike for hours and no one will wonder where I am, which is not only sad, but sounds downright dangerous. If you are going for a hike, tell somebody that you're
especially
going
a long hike. Look, tell someone.
You got to tell somebody.
Text someone. Text that person that you're like, this person hates me. Maybe that's bad advice.
Yeah,
but like,
no, we need
anyone.
We need to know where, when the search party goes out, like we need to know where you were on a hike.
It's helpful to you, ultimately.
You know, Molly, you know, has her own sad stories. She turns on the news and pretends George Stephanopoulos is her husband. And this really, I lolled. And then if she's had a glass of wine, she changes the channel and pretends Lester Holt is her side piece.
Is her side piece, which, you know, Lester Holt deserves better, but I respect it. I respect it. The side piece is usually the one that you like think is more fun. So it makes sense.
Right. Exactly. But Arthur's going to get a text that he has to take his daughter to her soccer game. And this is a problem because they're 4 hours away, but 4 hours away by car.
That's right. Ellipsis, ellipsis, ellipsis. Clearly we know that Molly is going to summon a hovercraft. Like that's the only, or a bullet train of some kind.
Or a spaceship.
Or a spaceship that will land. I mean, we'll talk about landings and where we can land and how ridiculous some of these landings are, but she will be able to land on a grass field.
Yes, which is great for all of them. Meanwhile, Nicholas and Howard are practicing the scene. It's going well. Even Nicholas feels good about it. And Howard's like, you're ready. You should go to the audition. So that plot is advancing. In the city council meeting, we see more of, you know, how much the city council is impressed with Molly. They blame John for the whole roller coaster thing. They think that she's handling being a billionaire woman of color very well. Sophia says, yes, she is handling it well. Sometimes.
This whole scene is hilarious. Like they just the fact that they're still talking about her. Like I love when a show like cuts away from something and then they come back and it's like, wow, we are still talking about this thing. It's really funny. It's like, yeah, and she was wrong and she was done dirty by her husband.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of stuff.
They love this. They love this. They love villainizing John. They love this like celebrity intrigue. They want to know what she's like. They're like, yeah, she just seems to get it. She's down. And Sophia's like, she gets it. And this is like after the Hot Ones interview, by the way.
It's like, yeah. People, that's how you know. People just like forget. They you know, it's forget. Like the cycle. If anything, the Hot Ones made people like her more. But it seems
apparently,
like
apparently, yeah.
City council people feel that way.
You know, Sophia's trying to play along. She's like, that's how I see Molly. A very down chick.
She says, she's like, I am reading these cards from across the room.
Yes. And then she's going to play that card and she's going to say, you know, Molly would really love to see this project move forward. She's very invested. And you know, and then they're going to put it on the agenda.
All right. I mean, Sophia's no dummy, as we know, as we have seen many, many times. She's very intelligent. So the least she's going to do is take advantage of it, at least in the room, even if it makes her a little, you know, uncomfy.
We could just talk through in the audition, like Nicholas, we see he shows up. He's sitting next to another actor who's on the phone. And this actor is like bragging about how he's been booking a lot of shows.
Yes. This blonde white actor. I should mention.
Yeah. Isn't this character like a Japanese like name, I think was in the, I thought I remembered that from, but it's.
Audition that he's there for.
Yeah. The audition that he's there for. But anyway, but Nicholas is sitting in this blonde white actor is like talking about, oh yeah, like it doesn't matter if I get the show and I've worked with this director before, I'm fully booked. You can see that Nicholas is like really starting to get discouraged and feel insecure about, you know, his chances. And then the casting assistant comes and calls Nicholas's name, but he's already gone. He's not there.
Which we were expecting. Like if you're watching the scene and you're like, oh God, is he going to get up and leave? No, don't leave, Nicholas. And of course he does.
He does. And he goes to the bathroom where he's getting texts from Howard. And like, this was so sweet. I love this. He's a picture of like Goku and Vegeta figures. And the text says, Vegeta, you are the greatest actor that ever lived. Exclamation point. For real. You're going to kill it, man. And then like after a beat, ... Also, can you bring me back some Pollo Loco with three chicken emojis?
Pollo Loco. I have not had it. I don't know that it's I think it's real.
I think it's real. I think it's a West Coast thing.
It's a West Coast thing, yeah. So that's why I haven't had it. But I will say this is hilarious to me personally because Vegeta has zero chill. Like Vegeta is not a good actor. Like I think I can think of a couple of times where he was like having to pretend or having to like keep things a secret and he is no bueno at it. But we can all, but Vegeta is a cartoon character mm-hmm. and Nicholas is a person. So obviously Nicholas can evolve and have way more chill than his Vegeta counterpart. Certainly, you know, here in this situation where he's, where Nicholas essentially is like hyping him up. And it's very sweet, like you said.
I love that you can bring all of this deep textual analysis of you Dragon Ball Z. I love that.
I never thought this would be useful to me, and I'm so happy that it is.
No, this is why the people come to Post Show Recaps, because we are going to go deep on all of these references, give you all of that rich context that uh-huh. you need. This was like so sweet. Like, I really, this made me think, like, I really wish I had a friend like Howard. this person who just like hypes you up. It's like, we saw Nicholas. And he was fine. Like, he was mm-hmm. a fine actor. He was, mm-hmm. he wasn't, like, I wasn't blown away. But, like, Howard really believes in him so hard. And, like, you just need those friends who are just in your corner and tell you the thing that you need to hear no matter what. And then at the same time, like, also being like, but, you know, can you bring me back some Polo Loco? So it's, like, it's very much just, like, a two-way street. Like, they're developing, right. like, a true reciprocal relationship. And this gives mm-hmm. Nicholas the confidence he needs. He goes back into the audition and then they take him and he goes into audition for the role. So we love this. We love Goku and Vegeta here.
We stan.
Meanwhile, while this is happening, we have Arthur's daughter needs to get to her soccer game. She's sort of nervously waiting at school, and we see Molly and Arthur show up in a helicopter to pick her up
and just like land in like a parking lot. I know that you have to have like certain kinds of like permissions and what are they called,
like a landing
some kind of like, I don't know, lease. No, it's not lease. Whatever. Like, you have to have permission to like land in certain places and whatever. It's a TV show. Rich people don't care. But if anything, maybe that part is super realistic, that like rich people in a certain area are just like, I'm just going to land my helicopter here.
I mean, this doesn't seem like it can happen, right?
Permits.
Like,
permits. That's the word I was thinking.
Lease. Permits.
Mm-hmm. Lease.
I'm sure that helps too. This is wild. So they land at the school, they take off, and then they're going to land on the soccer field too. I don't know how any of this works. Like, I know that there's a lot of like private jets and helicopters in Succession, which is like my context for all of this. Mm-hmm. But like, they have like their own like little like helipads and landing. Like, they have their whole setup. Like, I don't know. Right. Anyway, we're suspending.
Grass can't be it. And it has to be. Yes, I agree. Ultimately, we're suspending disbelief and it's fine. But like, it can't be good for the grass, right? Like, it's bad for the plant life and the wildlife.
And people need a warning, right? Like, don't you need everybody's like, okay, like everyone That's get away true. From. I would think. Yes.
You have to be like a certain amount of space away for like your own safety.
Yeah. I think you want to have like, what if there's like a little wee child? Like, couldn't like, it just get blown away?
How small, as Jess Sterling would say.
What if there's a wee one? That doesn't, little wee wee.
A little wee wee, like Howard's little cousin or something.
Yeah. Alex, Arthur's daughter, is like totally jazzed about this. She's taking a million selfies on the helicopter. When they land, mm-hmm. she like runs out and her teammates are super impressed. And she's like, we can go to Coldstone in it later.
Yeah. Which like, oh God. First of all,
where are you going to land at the Coldstone?
This was like really the Coldstone, like, the intersection of La Brea and Santa Monica.
Yeah. There's not a Coldstone in the middle of a field. Like, where are they going to land at the Coldstone?
No, I guess look at the fancy Coldstone in like Malibu has like,
it has like a helipad. Yeah. Probably. And Arthur asks Molly if she wants to stay for the game, and she does. So this is like their sweet little not date, professional work day together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're rooting. They're rooting for each other in a way, right? Like, or rather, Molly is like trying to be helpful. She's cognizant of like her effect on Arthur's relationship with his daughter, and like, mm-hmm. clearly she is enjoying that part of it.
Yeah. They're getting a little more involved in each other's lives now on a personal level. Back on the at the office, we learn like great news, everybody. We got the people out of the roller coaster last night.
Thank God.
Thank
these there four people.
Yeah, there were no injuries apparently. So I don't know that the, maybe that website, I don't know if they did their research.
I feel like there was at least some like discoloration. I mean, whatever. We don't have to get into details, but like, I don't feel good about the blood part of it, the blood pooling.
Yeah. I'm scared. So, but there were no injuries and good news for everybody. They're getting season passes.
The way Sophia makes a face as she's saying that, she's like, well, they're getting season passes now. Just like, it's so dumb. Like, it's such a real, like, almost realistic and laughable detail from something that would happen in real life. Like,
yeah.
Oh, the baby was born on this airline. Like, now they fly for free. Like, thank you. Thanks, I guess, for that. great stuff from Sophia here.
Yeah. But in even better news, arguably, there's a big win for the foundation. They got the housing project is going to go up to a vote for city council. And the decisive element was everybody really likes Molly after what happened to her. People are rooting for her. And Sophia says, and I understand because so am I.
This was sweet because, like I said before, I was worried about like what the tension might be within Sophia after like this, the city council people were so gung-ho about Molly, but I love the idea that it's still underneath there somewhere. Like I believe her and I believe that she believes that she is still actively rooting for Molly, but that doesn't mean that she can't still start to grow a little bit resentful of what Molly's involvement will get them.
Right. It's going to be complicated, but on a personal level, like they're definitely connecting now. And Molly gasps, oh, look at us, two new besties.
Two new besties, love it.
This was one of the funnier lines to me too in this episode. Sophia tells Molly to be careful because she's a public figure. People love celebrities, but they love to tear them down even more. And then she says, so keep that in mind before you do literally anything. Never go to a Halloween party. Never put on a costume of any kind.
Of any kind, full stop. Like, I thought there was going to be some kind of qualifier. No, just like no costume.
Never put on a costume. This is like actually excellent advice. This is excellent advice.
Excellent advice, probably for most people, but certainly for famous people who will get, as we are about to learn, get paparazzi'd to death. Mm-hmm. Everything you do is, you know, captured, documented by someone. And it's that thing of like, oh, I think this costume will be harmless.
Mm-hmm.
We know from real life, clearly they're always wrong. Whatever they thought
you're
was harmless
always
is not harmless.
Wrong. No, people. Yeah. No, you didn't think it through. You didn't get the context. Like, it's not just a cute wink, wink. Like, don't just don't put on a costume. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Back in the, you know, the communal work area, everybody is looking over at the same screen at a headline, and we see Molly moves on with Mystery Man. And there's a picture of Molly and Arthur together at the soccer game.
To the show's credit, I did not see this coming. Like, maybe that's like super naive, but like I didn't. Like, I thought, you know, I guess we see like all the people with their phones and they're all taking pictures of the helicopters, but I didn't expect the paparazzi at the soccer game, which I guess is probably dumb because somebody saw the plane land and then they just call 1-800-TMZ or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And people show up. But I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, I didn't see this turn coming either. I think that I was feeling like this is going to be more of like the Molly and Arthur have chemistry episode and we were going to leave like rooting for them. I didn't know that we were going to have like an obstacle put in the way of their relationship at this point so early on. So, you know, we're going to have this come out. Molly is going to see this, and this is right immediately following this conversation that she's had with Sophia about, you know, how her public image is going to reflect on the foundation, and she has to always put the foundation in mind and the fact that people are going to look for any reason to tear her down. So that's definitely in Molly's head when she sees that that the paparazzi have taken this picture and it's been published. There's really funny reactions from the rest of the office here. Nicholas says, "I'll take care of it. I'll say that he won a contest to spend the day with you." Howard tells Molly, like you don't have to date Arthur. You got so much money. You can buy any man. Chris Hemsworth, Liam Hemsworth. They could make you a new Hemsworth. Give him a Gosling head.
This is so funny. And I immediately thought of The Good Place, when there's like a fourth Hemsworth brother in the Good Place universe. And I was like, oh, they can just get the Hemsworth from the Good Place universe.
Yeah, this is something like we've seen, like I think Howard and Arthur are kind of like have this like to like Howard doesn't seem to like Arthur very much. Mm-hmm. Like we got a little bit of a nod to that in the beginning, but that hasn't really played out so much. So I'd love to see more of that dynamic. I think that could be funny. You know, Arthur sees the news piece too, and then Molly's going to announce to the office that there's nothing romantic. So everybody just get back to work on your files or whatever.
Hilarious. Again, completely unaware of anything that's going on in the office, which is
like,
funny.
What do people work on? Files, I guess.
Right. Like, that's digital PDFs. But what I love is like even just her turning around and immediately addressing it, while in some ways like, okay, that's a mature response. We have nothing to hide. Like, we'll just be open. It also, again, speaks to a little bit of like her naivete with like social interactions. Like, actually you talking about it in the office setting actually might make it worse. Like, people are gonna be like, oh, she is saying nothing's going on, but clearly they were hanging out. So it's just, it's like, okay, like maybe, I don't know. I can't say like what I would do in that situation, but I don't think it's as effective as Molly thinks it is in the moment.
Right. Like maybe take a beat and figure out whether this gets a response or how to respond to it.
Maybe talk to Nicholas.
Yeah. He won a contest.
Right. <That's>
Back in Molly's office, Arthur comes in and Molly apologizes about the paparazzi. Arthur, isn't worried about it. He says the pictures are harmless. He's like, but I hope the alpaca doesn't see the photos because that would ruin my chances. But this time, like, Molly doesn't play along with the joke. She sort of just like, stone faced, turns it down, like, doesn't reciprocate and just says, as your boss, I'd hate for people to get the wrong idea. I think I get in enough trouble as it is. And so like, this is definitely a turn from the relationship dynamic that they've had, the kind of playful banter throughout the rest of the episode and the series. And one thing that I noticed at the end of this episode is she puts on the reading glasses that Arthur gave her as.
Well, I didn't notice that. That's very sweet. I love little details like that. But I think it's Molly's reaction here to Arthur, and like obviously we see him be disappointed by like her kind of, no, we do need to like establish this boundary now, because it's fascinating to me that this comes kind of right on the heels of Sophia telling her like, you need to be really careful. And I love the idea that Molly is really trying to do right by Sophia specifically, like, yes, right by the foundation, and like not get maybe like, certainly maybe there's an element of Arthur's daughter and just her in general having respect. And of course, the general, like, if you're a boss, you shouldn't be like having any kind of romantic entanglements with people who be your employees. But for me, the most interesting part is her loyalty to Sophia specifically and wanting to do right by her.
Yeah. It's clear that this is like a direct result of the conversation that they just had and her taking that seriously and actually trying to do better. But I mean, I think that like this is one of those things where I think we're supposed to root for Molly and Arthur, and we're certainly going to have like so much empathy for Arthur because he's like, going to be disappointed that this is like thrown this wrench in their dynamic. But like, really, like, you shouldn't be getting this kind of personally involved, potentially romantically, with somebody that you work for, Molly.
Yeah, because I guess you could say, I should say very quickly, you could say her inter or her a relationship with the foundation is kind of
Like peripheral or
yeah,
like.
peripheral is exactly the word. But still, you know, there is like a power dynamic that is at play
Definitely.
that needs to be addressed, or at least needs to be it needs to, you know, be kept in mind. But I love, just from again from a messy standpoint, where the episode ends, which is that she bought him. So before she decided to put up that boundary, she had already bought him that painting of the bird that they saw in the museum. So it's like, and I love that the show even like in general, I'm like, you don't need to spoon feed me, like I can figure it out for myself. But I love here the little extra detail in the card itself of her saying, like nodding at the, like winking at the audience, like, remember this happened already before the boundary thing. It's like, I bought you this while you were away from the whatever in the bathroom or whatever it says. And he's happy, but then he's sad because
You
he
see his
realizes.
face fall, and like this really, oh, Ariel, this really like tugged at my heart. I
See?
felt so bad. I
I
know. No,
know.
I'm a sucker for it. But
Yeah.
he knows, like he sees, like it's like the little bird, the beautiful little bird. It
Yes,
flew
again,
away.
it
It
flew
flew away.
away.
And it's like he had this connection with Molly, and like whether it needed to be romantic or not, it's clear that even like the insinuation that it could be has meant that now it's going to be changed. And like, so he is experiencing like kind of like the high of having that connection with somebody, and then the low of feeling like it's gone forever. And like having this, you know, painting to be a reminder of that is just like, oh, it's so sad. I felt so bad for Arthur because, like, you know, he does seem like a sweet guy, and his life does seem a little bit sad.
A little bit sad, certainly, if not sad, like a little bit monotonous, a little bit like
A little
doing the same
lonely.
thing, especially because he's, you know, trying to keep routines with his daughter, and you know, him and his wife are separated, so that's very complicated in its own way. And he's trying to like maintain a level of normalcy in his life so that things are easier for his daughter. And this was like something that he was doing that was for him, that was his thing, and now it seems to have flown away, as you said. And I thought it was interesting that he takes the painting out of that box and then takes the painting into the house, but the box is still sitting outside. And I was trying to figure out, like, metaphorically, like,
Oh
one,
my goodness.
the first thing my brain said was, that's a mistake. Like, the production left it outside. But then I'm like, okay, no, but think it through. Like, what is that saying that, like, he invited the bird into his house, but it's, there's a part of it that's still outside because it's not really real anymore, or not as immediate, or not as full because of the conversation that he just had with Molly.
He can't bring it all in.
He can't let her in completely. Oh my God, we did
Oh,
it.
we are so brilliant. We are metaphorical, literary analysts
And Dragon Ball
extraordinaire.
Z geniuses. We contain all sides of the spectrum here, lowbrow and highbrow.
Who is dissecting this show as thoroughly as we are, Ariel?
Probably
Literally
no
no
one.
one. No one. Exactly no one. But
Yeah.
this is great. I'm having so much fun talking about this. I just want to mark the outro credits. The song that was playing was Pictures of You by The Cure, which is like a song that I love.
Yes, I knew it was The Cure, but I didn't know that that was the title, which just makes it that much, which
Pictures of
deepens
You.
the little bird
Little bird flew away.
metaphor, for lack of a better word.
Well,
Love
listeners, I hope that you don't fly away.
it. Stay with us just a
Stay
little
with
bit longer as
us.
we approach next, by next week, we'll be at the halfway point, episode 5.
We're approaching the halfway point, episode 5. We're doing our week-to-week coverage now on the release schedule. And you know, just still having a ton of fun covering Loot. And also, you know, today we're recording this on July 1st, which is the first of the month, which, as my
Ooh.
understanding, Ariel, is like the bestest time. I mean, if you're not, if this isn't one of those Julys that you've already sort of forgotten, maybe make this the July where you become a Post Show Recaps patron.
It's incredible. They charge you for the full month, no matter when you join. So the first of the month is the best time because you get the most for your money, especially if you're investing at that $87 billion level, oh, as we keep saying.
Because you really want to maximize your
you get to tell us what to do for an entire month, not just for, you know, and I'll do my quick thing again. I think July is 31 days. So, you know, that's more time than you get in the month than you got last month.
Wow.
So that's huge.
Oh my gosh. You can't afford not to become a post. That's
right. You're just throwing money away if you don't. Incredible stuff.
Well, where can the people find you, Ariel?
They can find me doing Colonel Tom Parker impressions over on Post Show Recaps Theater. Wow. We just covered Elvis. We had special guest Bram on with us. That was super fun to talk about. I cover movies every week with Grace. We'll be back next week, I believe, to talk about The Black Phone, a different kind of movie. Are you an Elvis person, Dr. Mann? Just out of curiosity.
I mean, am I an Elvis person? I guess if I have to think about it, the answer
I'm asking
is
if you're an Elvis impersonator. That's what I'm asking. That sounds like a no. That was basically my answer.
I mean, like, I know like a lot of Elvis's music because I've existed in the world.
You're like, I know how to spell it. You know, I'm a human.
I know that Elvis enjoyed a peanut butter banana and bacon sandwich.
Even I didn't know that. And I learned a lot about Elvis in the last week. Mm-hmm. So I must have forgot. I think that might have been in the movie, but the movie is very long.
Oh, do you recommend it?
I recommend maybe doing like an intermission, you know, like maybe watching half, and you know, which is kind of difficult to do in a movie theater. Although I learned on a recent trip that they do intermissions in Portugal. They will just they literally stop the movie, which was a little bit rude, but whatever. I use the opportunity to go to the restroom. But I am on Twitter at that other Ariel.
All that is to say.
Follow me on Twitter at that other Ariel. Dr. Amanda, what about you? Where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter where I am at Dr. Amanda R. That's Dr. Amanda R.
Incredible stuff. And if you're still listening after all of this gibberish, we appreciate you so much for doing so. Special thanks, as always, to David Chang. We wish you a very, very wholesome goodbye.
Bye.